Did it do it again?
Nope, we're good.
Oh, we are good. All right.
Yep. There we go. For those that did not know, we had a little technical difficulty at the start of this episode here. But we are good to go, and we are back with another episode of Stacking Denny's. I'm Jordan McAbee of RotoBaller, my co-host Nick Giffen of the Action Network. And we just had one of, if not the best finishes to a NASCAR race. Definitely in this next-gen era. That might have been one of the best finishes that I've ever seen in recent memory by far. It's not close. Three-wide finish, Daniel Suarez, Ryan Blaney, Kyle Busch. Even the photo finish slow-mo replay, you could not really tell who actually won that race. Ended up being Daniel Suarez, but I think 0.007 seconds. Like, insanely close. Daniel Suarez gets it. Ryan Blaney comes home second. Kyle Busch third. Overall, though, That's not even the only best part about this race. That was, I talked shit about Atlanta for a while. I didn't like the first four Atlanta races. I did not like this track. The truck race wasn't good on Friday night. The Xfinity race was fucking awful on Saturday. I came into this race expecting the worst, and it completely blew everything out of the water. Todd Gilliland looked like a legitimate contender to win this race. Michael McDowell, of course, was strong again. Joey Logano got an early penalty. We're going to talk about that with his glove. Was able to overcome that penalty, but he got in an accident. We had a giant pileup on lap one.
Yep.
And overall, just, again, the amazing finish. But Daniel Suarez in victory lane, you know what I think about that guy. But congratulations to Team Trackhouse. They have, once again, a second amazing finish that goes down in the NASCAR history books.
Yeah.
If you could say anything about that team, they are able to create excitement, or they have created excitement since they've came into the sport. But Daniel Suarez locks himself into the playoffs. Nick, I already know you love this race, but just how much did you love it? Because 95% on Jeff Gluck's poll said that that was a good race. One of the highest ever.
Yeah. It was incredible. Like, actually incredible from start to finish. I'm not talking a great finish and that saved a mediocre or a bad race. Like, legitimately, the whole race was exciting. There was passing for the lead throughout the whole race. Don't we like to see that? Yes, we do. While track position mattered, you could still make it up. This was like classic Daytona from the mid-2000s, where handling mattered. And when that happened, it created the kind of pack racing where we're more used to rather than the last year or two with the next gen car, even at Daytona and Talladega, but especially Atlanta, where track position became so important. Yeah, it was still important here, but you could move through the field. You could make moves, and you sometimes didn't even need help to make moves. It was literally like old Daytona, the stuff that, you know, people of our age or in our era grew up loving. And I just thought it was incredible from start to finish. And you know what's great? Handling mattered. And not only did it matter, we saw RFK cars, for example, screw up twice because of handling, both once for Buescher and once for Keselowski. They each screwed up, caused wrecks because of handling. That was amazing to see. And if you had a handling issue, other drivers could get underneath you. And of course, if you wiggle, it doesn't matter if you're in the draft, you're going to have to catch that car and slow down and back out of it. And so others will be able to pass you that way. It was an incredibly good race. There was not a bad thing I could say about that. Yeah, there were wrecks, but that happens. And people are like, well, it was a wreck fest. It wasn't really a wreck fest. You know why these wrecks happened? Unlike the truck series or even sometimes the Xfinity series, these wrecks happened because these cars were a handful. Not because these drivers were driving poorly. Not like because, you know, in the truck series, they just all like don't give a shit. They'll hit the hell out of you and wreck each other because they're terrible drivers. These were professional drivers, A-plus quality driving. They all drove really well the whole race. And almost to a T, every single wreck that happened was because of kind of a stack up or one bad bump, I think, like happened with Ross Chastain spinning somebody. But other than that, it was like handling issues. It was like the types of wrecks we see on normal tracks. And you don't call those, not you specifically, but like one doesn't call those wreck fests when we see a driver hit the wall because they had handling issues. It was a really damn good race. I don't have a bad thing to say about it. We saw a four wide pass for the lead, and then second place was battling four wide right after Cindric took the lead from the four wide. I mean, it was – we didn't even know Atlanta could go four wide and sustain that.
Yeah.
Like, we've never seen that at Atlanta, and all of a sudden it did. Not only did they sustain it, they held it through a couple turns a few times. And then, of course, obviously the finish. I mean, just an absolutely stunning finish. I originally, like, I shouted, Blaney won. And I think TV thought Blaney won. Like, everybody to the naked eye. I know Toby Christie, who's a NASCAR journalist, also thought Blaney won to the naked eye. And he even tweeted. I legitimately did, too. I thought Blaney won the race. Clint Bowyer, everybody thought Blaney won, it looked like, to the naked eye. And guess what? It was Daniel Suarez. And again, even looking at the slow-mo, I know the scoring is 0.003. It honestly seemed closer than that. Like, it, I'm surprised it was not the closest finish in NASCAR history. But what an absolutely incredible race. The whole race, I was on the edge of my seat just because it was everything you wanted. Look, like, you mentioned how great Todd Gilliland raced. He raced awesome. Corey LaJoie got up there at certain points later in the race. You know, even that one of those late wrecks, Carson Osovar was running 10th. Like, it's still one of these spots where these cars can run kind of towards the front. We saw Justin Haley at mid-pack or a little ahead at points. We saw BJ McLeod outrunning a couple guys just in the normal draft. So it was a really good race. I think it was, in my opinion, the best race of the next gen era. I know last year Kansas won. Was absolutely amazing. I loved Kansas 1. I would rank this higher than Kansas 1. The finish put it over the top. Both of them, for me, were neck and neck for the, just like the quality of the racing, the whole race. But the finish put it over the top. Unbelievable. Kudos to NASCAR, honestly. We've talked about how they've made great calls and stuff. Well, the package is coming in at Atlanta. You know, we're getting a little bit of wear, a little bit of bumpiness at Atlanta, and I think that's making the racing better at Atlanta right now. So just an awesome and like the track conditions change, right? Like, we were in day and then we went into dusk, and then it like ended almost under the like nighttime. It was such an awesome race. I don't have a bad thing to say about that race. It was absolutely incredible.
Overall, you know, some people are going to say the finish is what, like, we see that a lot. We see Jeff Gluck's poll be really influenced by finishes. And for anybody that watched that race, they know that that wasn't the case. That was good racing the entire time. And, how much do you think, one of the big stories this last weekend at Atlanta was the track was actually wearing a lot more than they thought they would. And I think that's the main part of why we got such good racing, because this track was worn down a little bit, created, tire wear, obviously, but also the handling aspect of it, which created great racing. Mm-hmm. Another thing that started with this 2024 schedule, you know, they switched Atlanta to the second race. So we went Daytona, Atlanta. And a lot of people were like, oh, this is dumb. Like, we know why we're doing it. We're trying to hold fans. We're trying to hold ratings. I'll tell you what, we bitch about a lot of things on this podcast. There's a lot of things I don't like that NASCAR does. Doing that NASCAR series on Netflix and making this the second race and this overall, I mean, we saw the bump in viewership this week compared to last year for this race, or for the second race of the year. Kudos to NASCAR for everything that they have done and the decisions that they've made. And I don't think they're getting enough credit right now for that, because Daytona was Daytona. You're always going to get a good crowd. It is what it is with it getting pushed back to Monday and the number of viewers that got. But Atlanta was absolutely the great call. And you know what? What's the first race in the playoffs this year?
Atlanta. Exactly.
Atlanta. So this is overall just a great call, and I really like what NASCAR did there. But like you said, a lot of good stories coming out of this race. And a lot of, I think, us heading to Las Vegas this week, it's I think we're going to get some betting value out here, because we started this season with two super speedways, and we're going to get to Vegas. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. But 14 different leaders here in Atlanta. Like we said, Todd Gilliland might have had the best car in this race. He led the most laps. He led 58 laps. had an issue there late, ended up finishing 26th. That's like the kind of his MO at super speedways. But Michael McDowell won the first stage. Austin Cedric won the second stage. We saw a lot of our typical drafting guys get up front. Corey LaJoie was up there. Kaz Grala had a great finish up there in 14th. You mentioned Justin Haley, BJ McLeod, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. obviously coming home sixth. Bubba Wallace, top five, another top five, two top fives to start this season for Bubba Wallace. And then, of course, Ryan Blaney, which I retweeted it. The number of super speedway races that Ryan Blaney has finished first or second that have come down to just absolutely amazing finishes. 2024 Atlanta, 0.003 seconds. 2023 Talladega, 0.012. 2022 Talladega, 0.046. 2020 Talladega, 0.007. Same with 2019 Talladega. And then 2017 Daytona, 0.228 seconds. Margin of victory for super speedway races where Ryan Blaney finishes first or second. So overall, though, do you think we learned anything from these first 2 weeks that we can apply moving forward? Are you surprised that any leans or learnings from the new Fords, the new Toyotas? Or do we really have to get it to Las Vegas this week to really see any difference with these two first races being super speed?
I think the number one takeaway is those front row motorsports cars are essentially Penske's, right? Not quite, but they're tier one for sure. They're tier one Fords. They look good. And I know you and I have been itching to fire away on them, how they look good. And we'll talk about that for Vegas, but that is tier one Ford equipment. They look better than Stewart Haas Racing straight up. And, you know, even Stewart Haas Racing had a couple penalties I'm sure we'll talk about as well, but they look better than Stewart Haas. The front row motorsports looks better than Stewart Haas, but obviously that's in a very specific scenario here. We have two drafting races. Chase Briscoe has looked pretty good in them. I will admit that he was way too aggressive and ended up causing one of those wrecks. And like, Chase Briscoe is the only one that, for me, that was like, man, what are you doing? Like, you're acting like a Truck Series driver late in that race. And this happens to Chase Briscoe. We see it time and time again. Remember Bristol Dirt? Remember Indy Road Course? Like, the dude just, late in the race, he just goes bananas if he's kind of in it. And it's a little too much. And he did it again. He stuffed it four wide, which wasn't the problem, but he wasn't able to hold it. And the guy's just, for me, Chase Briscoe is just overly aggressive in these spots. You know, we mentioned how Keselowski's sometimes overly aggressive, but Chase Briscoe has that happen. Keselowski's overly aggressive too early. Chase Briscoe's overly aggressive, and I know you need to be aggressive late to try to win, but to me, he's overly aggressive late, and that's why we keep seeing late incidences with him. But that's a little aside to take away from the first two races. The big takeaway is front row motorsports. I don't know that we're going to know whether Ford is good or bad at Las Vegas. I don't know if we're going to know whether Toyota is good or bad at Las Vegas. Chevy's still Chevy. They didn't change anything up. But at least in the Ford pecking order, front row motorsports is up maybe right after Penske and right up there with RFK, you know?
Yeah, I'm very interested. I want to get back to SHR. That's going to be our next topic here as we wrap up Atlanta quick. But I'm really interested to see. I think this week at Las Vegas is going to be very telling for a lot of teams, specifically front row motorsports, because they struggled on mile and a half last year to start out. Second, the end of the year, though, McDowell specifically finished 15th at Texas, 17th at Las Vegas there in those final races. Front row motorsports was not good at mile and a half last year. I think they're going to be good this year. And I think Ford, as we've seen so far, is super fast at qualifying these first two races. I don't think their race is good in the actual race. So a lot of question marks going into Las Vegas. But first, let's talk about Stewart Haas, the penalties that were assessed to these guys. Ryan Preece and Noah Gregson, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. Illegal parts. Once again, Stewart Haas Racing gets caught cheating. This is becoming a pretty common thing. I read a tweet. I think this is like the seventh time that they've been penalized. Here's the thing, though. They're not good. They're not fast. Like, yeah. they have all these illegal parts. They're getting caught doing all this shit. They're not good. And it doesn't make sense. Like, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. But they're trying, but they're not fucking good at it. Speaking of which, you know, the struggles that Stuart Haas has, I know Tony Stewart said, you know, heads are going to roll if they don't improve. I think that's another reason why Chase Briscoe is so aggressive. I think these guys are frustrated as all hell. Briscoe especially, because if you remember last year, all of the intermediate tracks, he unloaded as a shitbox car every single week. Like, he was slower than – he was as slow as
– he was in the 30s in my flags metric every single intermediate package race.
Yes, which is
– for the start of the season.
Unbelievable, three or four or five in a row. For Stuart Haas Racing. So, yeah, I think that's something to keep an eye on. That's another thing I want to know what the hell is going to happen, you know, because their driver lineup's not that good. Now we come to a track type that the organization overall struggled at last year, specifically Briscoe. A lot of question marks coming into Atlanta, but
into Vegas.
So Vegas, sorry.
Yeah,
Gregson and Priest assess penalties for illegal parts. 35 driver points, so that actually puts I think Gregson in negative points now, and then Priest has zero. So not that we expected these guys to make the playoffs without getting a win, but this just puts them that further back.
Right.
Do you think that does anything to – is that going to change anything for how fast they are at Vegas, or is just this just a rolling?
Yeah, it's the same thing. Like, we saw a couple penalties with Hendrick last year. It is what it is. It's, you know, they're trying to get an advantage and they didn't. They got caught. I will say, like, you know, last year Hendrick got those penalties. Byron got the penalty. Bowman got the penalty, and Chase Elliott's car, not him because he was out with his injury, but the 9 of Josh Berry when he was running it. Now Berry didn't get penalized himself because he wasn't running for points in Cup, but the 9 team got penalized. We saw after that Bowman and Elliott struggled, but that also could have been attributed to their injuries. Byron was still really good, although they did have a little bit of lacklusterness in the middle of the season, but that's kind of just a Hendrick thing. Even then, Byron still won, you know, Darlington, which is race number 13 on the year, Atlanta, which is Atlanta, and then he won Watkins Glen, so all before the playoffs, and he only won one playoff race and still made the final four. So it's tough to say if it'll affect Stuart Haas Racing. My inclination is they are what they are right now at this point, so it doesn't really matter. Just the point deduction hurts worse than, you know, than the lack of being able to improve from cheated parts.
Yeah. And like I said, their driver lineup isn't great. They have shown speed on these first two races, but again, it's super speedway racing. I expected them to look decent.
Who do you think is the best Stuart Haas Racing driver?
I don't even know.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Like, if you had to pick between the four, I could make a case for all four of them.
I want to say. Yeah, I want to say Briscoe just based on like, you almost have to go subset of tracks, you know.
Yeah.
Shorter tracks probably give me Priest, but you could make like flat tracks, you go Briscoe.
And funny enough, I think Gregson probably has the highest career upside.
Yeah.
Still pretty young. He's you know, been amazing in the Xfinity series, like actually amazing. He's only 25 years old. You know, he's finished third and second in the Xfinity series championship. Well, he went from 8th to 5th to 3rd to 2nd in the Xfinity series championship, and that's straight up constant improvement. Finished second in the truck series before he joined the Xfinity series. And then he got a full season under his belt, or sorry, half a season under his belt last year, but he'd also run some cup races in 2022 to like kind of combine for a full season already under his belt in the next gen car. He might, and with the way this driver lineup is, he may already be the best Stuart Haas Racing driver. I don't know for sure, but I think he might have the most upside if he continues to improve. And based off, you know, all the stuff that happened with him last year where he got suspended mid-season and Now he seems to have come back with a better head on his shoulders. And so supposedly, if that continues and the improvement continues, he might have the best upside as far as a career in the Cup Series.
Yeah. And then we have Josh Berry, who I love the pairing with Childers.
Yeah, I do.
That's what's keeping Berry as in the conversation here as well. I would love if Childers went over and paired with Gregson. Mm-hmm. I think that'd be awesome. But yeah, right now I think I'd probably put Briscoe number one. As much as I don't like saying that. If you tone down his aggressiveness, I think he's the most consistent of the four as far as mediocre finishes.
Yes, I agree with that.
And then they all have just very specific upsides at certain tracks.
Yeah. And like, so I'm looking at Josh Berry here, right? He raced 2022 JRM when Noah Gregson did. Gregson finished second in the points. Berry finished fourth in the points. Berry only had three wins. Last year, he had zero wins in the Xfinity Series. Like, to me, Noah Gregson, you know, he finished second the year Berry finished fourth. But when Berry had three wins, Gregson had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. The year before that, mm-hmm. Gregson had three wins. The year before that, Gregson had two wins in the Xfinity Series, right? So we're just not seeing that from Josh Berry. Yeah, he had three that one year, I think it was, with JRM. And then he had two in 2021 with JRM. But he had zero last year. So he's capable of winning, but he hasn't been winning at the rate that Noah Gregson has been winning.
Could you see any of these Stewart Haas cars competing for a top 10 this week at Las Vegas? I will say,
honestly,
Eric Almirola in that 10 finished 16th and 14th in the two Vegas races last year.
And then obviously Kevin Harvick.
It
just depends on how the Ford camp shows out as a whole. If for some reason, you know, obviously with the new nose, maybe Ford just ends up kicking ass here. And then, you know, they're the seventh, eighth, and ninth place Ford cars or something. You know, we don't know. So if Ford is amazingly good, yes. If they aren't amazingly good, probably not. It can happen. I mean, new car, new body, new tire, we'll talk about. Right side tire. It could end up being a bit of a wild race with all these unknowns. And they can finish top 10. But I wouldn't make them favored to finish top 10 right now.
Right. I'm right there with you. I just see the upside with, you know, Gregson. I feel like people aren't going to really be thinking about him. Mm-hmm. And I think there is upside there. I'm pretty sure he has a decent record here in the Xfinity Series at Vegas. This is his home track, just like Kyle Busch. So I want to keep an eye on that. And then, you know, Josh Berry and how he does with that that four car and what Childers does with him. So one more penalty from Las Vegas was Joey Logano and his gloves, which was the weirdest news I have seen in a while. I wasn't really expecting it. Got done with my live stream on Sunday before the race and then got on and saw that Logano had to serve a pass-through penalty, go down pit road to start the race, which, you know, obviously completely diminished his dominator potential in DFS. You know, went from, hey, we need to play Logano in DFS to, hey, do not put him in any lineup. Completely fade him. I had him projected 20% ownership before the penalty. Yeah. He ended up at, I think, 11 or 12. So the thing is, though, he got saved by that first lap caution, and he still could have ended up, you know, being fine in that race. But basically, Joey Logano's glove, they added webbing in between the thumb and the index finger, supposedly to try and decrease the drag and make him a little bit faster. It's funny the shit that they come up with, but he got caught by the Fox cameras. That's the only reason, because you could definitely tell it on those replays. Were you surprised that he didn't get any? I think the actual penalty was like 10 grand or something. That's it. Were you expecting a bigger penalty than that, other than the
No, and Bob Pockers tweeted about it. Bob tweeted about it. Future Hall of Famer Bob Pockers tweeted about it that the reason he didn't get anything more than the $10,000 fine, whereas, you know, Stuart Haas Racing, they got their competition penalty in addition to the monetary fine, they got their 35 points. Joey Logano's points penalty was the in-race penalty, right? Like, it supposedly was going to set him down more than a lap and all that stuff. And he got absolutely bailed out by it. But yeah, it's interesting. I do think people overreacted to the Logano news. Mm-hmm. Like, I got to bet every matchup against Logano now. I'm like, no, you don't. It was one of those weird things where, like, all of a sudden everybody's betting this, and they kind of got those people bailed out. Like, as much as Joey got bailed out, those people got bailed out by Logano being involved in that one wreck as well. Because it very easily could have been Logano winning this race.
Blaney, obviously, I think Blaney had the best car. Of Gill, you know, Gillen led the most laps, but I think Blaney overall had the best car.
I would agree.
Obviously, you know, Logano won this race last year. But yeah, once again, you know, you and I have talked about this. DFS players specifically react very, when that penalty gets announced, where they have to do a pass-through penalty, they react aggressively. And I don't disagree that that was the call this week to take Logano out of your DFS lineups. Like, yep. I specifically went in and I said, hey, take Logano out, pivot to Blaney.
Yeah, in DFS, he was essentially a 0% play at that point. Close enough. Like, my optimal had him at 4.5%, I think, after the penalty, because I essentially set his starting position to dead last. And at that point, but dead last, but with the scored actual from scored from second deal. Like, in terms of his dominator potential, I set his dominator potential to a second place starting position. But let him be scored from second place starting. So at that point, he ended up like 4.5%. And it's just not, you know, it's not going to work out like that into being in the optimal at a track where, you know, you pretty much have to dominate. Yeah, you have to dominate to if you start that far forward. So he became 4.5%. So in DFS, yes, I think it made a lot of sense to react aggressively there, but I'm talking like betting. Like, people were like getting really aggressive, like betting all these anti Logano matchups. And I think it was overboard. Those people got pretty lucky, in my opinion, to do that. Because I had I wanted to kind of have a side bet where I was like, I'm betting Joey Logano would be back in the lead lap well before the end of the race. You know, I was talking like mid stage two, or like at worst the stage two, like free pass or wave around. You know what I mean?
All he needed was one early caution and then the stage caution, you know?
Exactly. And then all he really needed was the early caution, 'cause it was on lap one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's just another example of, I can't remember a time where that specific penalty has really killed a driver. Even
Allmendinger, that one time at Martinsville, it seems like that was it.
I don't remember that one. Just probably
he was so fast, and he drove his way up from dead last to, I think, 26, but he never got back on the lead lap. It was like the first Martinsville race. It was like that really cold one, you remember?
Oh, that awful one.
Like that one. And he just never got back on the lead lap because he couldn't, because they never had cautions and shit, and it's Martinsville. But like, that to me was like the main one that like a driver got screwed. But almost every single other time that a driver's had a pass through at the start, they've been fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially at the bigger tracks. Like, it's not an issue at Pocono. We've seen it. It hasn't even been an issue at Bristol. Like,
right.
This penalty is not anything. If anything, you can usually use it to leverage the other way. You know, if DFS players, and I'm talking specifically about DFS here, DFS players, you know, get off of a driver, it just gives you the stand your ground, typically, because you know that they're good. It's just one little setback, but we've seen it time and time again where people can overcome it. So Joey Logano, $10,000 fine. It's going to be a talking point for a while, just because we haven't really seen that type of penalty before. Yeah. But definitely another, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. So that should wrap up Atlanta. You got anything else to take away from that race?
No, other than it was the best damn race I've seen in the next gen era for sure. One of the best races in NASCAR I've ever seen. And it should be applauded, and NASCAR should be applauded. I mean, just as a whole, they've absolutely nailed everything. The only other thing I'll say is, holy shit, the Xfinity package here sucks.
Yeah. Yes.
And even the truck race wasn't good. Somehow with the Cup Series, it's all worked out. I think there's a handful of reasons why. Better drivers, more closely competitive cars, right? Like in the Xfinity Series, you get a bunch of shitboxes. In the trucks, you get a bunch of shitboxes. We don't really have shitboxes in Cup at this point anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it makes the racing closer. And just also how they were so much harder to handle. We didn't see the difficulty handling of the Xfinity car. We didn't see the difficulty handling of the trucks. So it was a lot of that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My only concern, and Sean Traylor pointed it out on Twitter, and I agreed with him entirely. I hope it doesn't get to the point where NASCAR sees that and they know, you know, how exciting Talladega and Daytona are, and then we go heavy into a, you know, 0 to 100 into a super heavy super speedway schedule, just like they did with road courses.
And it's interesting because they're doing that with, like, I think Michigan and Indy for Xfinity and or trucks. You know what I mean? They're trying that out, and I hope they don't go that direction with Cup. I agree with you. I don't think they will. I think this is like the perfect balance. You know, six a year out of 36, it's 1/6 of the races.
Mm-hmm.
Might be a little much even, but I can handle six a year.
Yeah. Please do not go more.
Don't add more.
But I mean, we got tracks coming up that are getting repaved that are they going to do the same thing? It's
yep.
Oh, but anyway, we're on to Las Vegas Motor Speedway and the Pennzoil 400. We got a new tire at Las Vegas, which I want to talk about first.
Are we whining about it before Vegas or after Vegas?
let's whine about it. Let's whine about it. Yeah, good point. I forgot.
Yeah, I was going to say. We got some new swag from, you know, Lubabella and Brew Kettle.
We got beers from Brew Kettle. That's right. I'm so excited. We
have new beer from Brew Kettle, which... Jordan, I know you know the ins and outs of it better than me, but obviously Lubabella Wines has been our sponsor for a year and continuing into year two, and we love them. They have amazing wine. We reviewed most of their wine portfolio last year. They're available in stores in a lot of states, and I am still going to try one of the wines out. It's one of my favorites. You'll hear it from me, but I do have a couple new ones that I'll try. I'm just not doing it on this episode. I figured first one, I got to kick it off with my bourbon barrel aged, you know, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Sauvignon, but, we got new beers as part of Brew Kettle. So I'm excited for it. I don't know what you have to say about it all.
Yeah. So Brew Kettle is up in Northeast Ohio. They have 5 locations. Very glad to have them on this year. I have not tried these beers. This is the first time I'm opening them. I'm excited to try this. It's a chocolate peanut butter stout, which I really like chocolate stouts. I really like peanut butter stouts. I really love them when they're on nitro. So I'm interested to see what this tastes like. But yeah, you know, shout out to them. Obviously Lubabella has been a great sponsor, and Brew Kettle, you know, should, I'm excited for this partnership as well. They also have food, which I'm, I want to go up because they're having, fresh shucked oysters. Whoa. Later. Yeah. Yes. I fucking love oysters. Last time I was in New Orleans, I sat and I ate 6 dozen oysters in one. Like that was my dinner. I ate 6 dozen oysters. Mm-hmm. I love oysters so much.
Me too, dude.
Oh man. And obviously, you know, I'm in Ohio, so
it's harder for you to come by. Yeah.
So, but yeah, we're going to kick off Wine About It, presented by Lubabella Winery and the Brew Kettle this week. Nick, I'm going to let you go first as I'm going to open this beer and try it first.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, we're going to get all the action here. I'm going to do the ASMR pour of the wine. I did already have some because I've already reviewed this and I couldn't, help myself. I needed to have some, but we'll do a little ASMR pour if you're watching on YouTube, or if you're listening, I'm going to try to get it right near the microphone.
That's solid.
Yeah.
Kind of sounds like you're peeing, but that's solid.
Yeah, but it, you know, it's a fair point, but I'm not peeing into a cup. You can see it on YouTube. So yeah, bourbon barrel aged Cabernet Sauvignon, my favorite Luvabella wine. Definitely tastes like bourbon. Definitely is a really nice cab, and that blend of the two is just incredible. But I'm gonna try this white Raja Karuth, white Raja. You know, shout outs to Raja Karuth. He's doing really well in the Trucks and Xfinity series when he races. So I hope he continues to have a great career. 6.8% alcohol by volume. It's an IPA. So here we go. All right, that is good. I like IPAs, and I know people have varying opinions on IPAs, everything from hate them to love them. There's a wide range of IPAs, like really hoppy, really like gets you. This one is, while it is hoppy, it's not very hoppy. So it's a little more smooth of an IPA. Really nice. I like it a lot. I'm super easy drinking. Unlike some IPAs, which are heavier, heftier, hoppier, all that jazz. But my wine about it. So Jeff Gluck put out the Good Race poll, and 5% of the people had the audacity to say that was not a good race. And I don't have an issue if you didn't think it was a good race, if you had better reasons for it. But every reason I've looked at on Twitter, literally every single one, whether it was on response to Gluck's poll or other comments in various Twitter spots, is it was not a good race because it was a super speedway race, and I don't like super speedway racing. Then why the hell are you watching if you already know you don't like it? It'd be like me watching baseball, even though I don't like baseball, right? Like, why would I go watch this thing I hate to watch? My girlfriend, I love her. She's amazing, but she hates the NFL. Imagine if she went to watch a football game, right? Like, she would never. Why are you watching something you already know you're not going to like? It was not a good race. Then why are you watching it? You've already predetermined this is not a good race. Then don't watch it. You have a lot of better things you could do with your time and your life than to watch something you're not entertained by. And it's as simple as that, Jordan. I don't need to go on more than that on a whine about it. It's as simple as that. What are you doing? I don't care if you didn't like the race. That doesn't bother me. You can hate super speedway racing. That's fine. I like super speedway racing. I've always loved Daytona. I've always loved Talladega. I've not really liked New Atlanta until this past race. But I don't think I go into Atlanta thinking, man, I'm going to hate this because it's a super speedway race and I hate super speedway races or plate racing or pack racing or whatever you want to call it. I went in, watched the race, didn't have high hopes at all. We talked about it last week on the podcast, especially after Trucks and Xfinity, did not have high hopes. I was absolutely blown away. It was, like I said, one of the best NASCAR races I've ever watched. And to me, the best in the next gen era. So if you don't like it, if you already have decided you don't like super speedway racing, why are you even watching it? That it makes no sense. And then you shouldn't vote in Jeff's poll because you didn't watch it, so you don't have an opinion on it. That's my line about it. It's as simple as that.
And here's the thing. That poll set a new record for number of votes at 49,117. So 5.2% of that roughly is 2,500 people voting no. I understand that there's going to be – in these polls, if you don't like who won – you're going to vote no. If you just want to be a fucking asshole, you're going to vote no. If you don't like this, but it doesn't. Yeah. What do you actually expect? And I know we say this a lot, especially the races that are like in the 80s, you know, typically a good race is 80s. It's like, what do you expect? And, you know, maybe they want more wrecks or whatever. But what was this race actually missing from the general population of all of the things that people want in races? They want the close finish. They want the wrecks. They want the side-by-side racing. This had it
passing,
all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It had passing. It had wrecks. It had
fuel mileage at one point. And even with the fuel mileage, they were still passing and stuff. Like, this race had literally, it had strategy. It had everything.
I would like one person to, yes, just tell me what it's missing. Don't give me, yeah, I'm with you. Don't tell me I don't like that type of racing. Okay, your opinion is invalid. Anybody that genuinely did not like that race, I want a specific reason as to why. Just give me one. Give me one thing that it was missing, because I can't think of a fucking thing.
They don't like Super Speedway Racing. That's just their reason. And that's every single response I've seen. And some are more nuanced than others. And people are like, oh, that was a really nuanced reply. I can understand why. But you already knew going in then you weren't going to like it. Because the nuance is, I don't like Super Speedway because I feel it's manufactured. And you could say a whole lot of words to say, I just don't like this style of racing. It doesn't make it any more nuanced. It just means you don't like that style of racing. You don't like Super Speedway Racing because you think it's manufactured. Then don't watch it. Turn the TV off and go do something with your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you. That's all it needs to be said, the whine about it. It's, I have no words. I have no words for people
who don't
enjoy that race. I went into that race fully.
Same.
I was ready to come on here and whine about people that enjoyed it. That's mm-hmm. how much I that's the little expectations I had for this race. That was an amazing race. It's going to go down in the history books. So
yeah. I will give a special shout out, and Greg knows this, to Greg, who watched two laps and said, I don't enjoy New Atlanta. And then just went out with his kids to the playground or something, which I actually really respect, right? If you know you're not going to like it, go to the playground with your kids. That's exactly what I'm talking about. That's 100% what I'm talking about. If you know you're not going to like it, take your kids to the playground. Go to the bar, whatever. Do something. Go play video games like I do. Whatever. And I madly respect Greg for doing that, saying, man, I don't like this. I'm going to do something else and not watch this. And then he came back, you know, he saw the tweets, he heard about it. Oh, okay, I'm interested. And then he watched it back and he was like, damn, that was fucking good. So that is like mad respect right there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Agree 100%. People and not being able to be pleased, which I think is kind of ironic considering we have our whine about it segment. But
oh, yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, my whine about it. First, I'm gonna review this beer because I do. Like I said, I like chocolate porn and peanut butter. Why can't I chocolate porn butter style?
Chocolate porn butter. Let's go. That is something. Oh God.
Oh, let's try to get this. I'm gonna
when you tweet out the Stacking Denny's, we're live, or you know, like you always make your tweet like Stacking Denny's is up or whatever. I'm just gonna reply chocolate porn butter and see what happens to your mentions. See if the bots all flood you.
Oh, they definitely will. Anyway, so the chocolate peanut butter beers, I like these beers. I like dark beers. I really like them when they're on nitro. That is my absolute favorite. I love nitro beers. It is my number one beer, and when you can get them where it's like creamy and sweet, and then you have the chocolate peanut butter, like I love that taste. I can sit there and drink them all night. My biggest issue with stouts like this is, and this is called Monocle, by the way, Monocle peanut butter stout, 5.8% alcohol. Typically they have that very strong artificial peanut butter taste, which is, it really ruins the beer, especially when it doesn't have the nitro to make it creamy and taste a little bit better. I'll tell you what, this does not have that false peanut butter taste.
Good. Because that's my thing. I don't like the false peanut butter taste. I love peanut butter, but I don't like the false peanut butter. I do like some peanut butter stouts or, you know, those kinds of things. And some I don't. So I'm glad this one doesn't have that as much. I can't wait to taste it now because that makes me feel a lot better.
This is – so if I had to describe it, the taste, it tastes like a light stout, I guess would be my best way to put it. But then the peanut butter and the chocolate, it hits you after, like, you swallow, and then the taste hits you. It's very interesting how this beer works. I like it. This is a good beer. I give it a solid 7.4 out of 10, probably. I could sit here and drink this, especially in the winter. Okay. I like darker beers in winter.
This IPA, and you know, if for me, I love like very strong IPAs, super hoppy, whatever. But for a, I would say a less intense IPA, this is in a very specific subcategory for a lesser intense IPA. This is like a 9, 9.5.
Okay.
Now,
I can't wait to try it.
It's not my preferred style of IPA, like I said, but for this specific style of IPA, I love it. I absolutely love it. I would drink this, a lot of this. I would.
excuse me. I'm not a big fan of IPAs, so I'm a little intimidated.
You would like this of the IPAs? You would like this, is what I'm saying.
That's why I can't wait to try it.
It has a little bit of that, you know, you've tasted on your tongue hoppiness, but it's very mild. And it's just good. It has a nice flavor. I don't know how to explain it other than that, but it's just good.
Yeah. I'll try that next week. But I'm now looking forward to it, because I was going to do it tonight, but I was like, no, I'm going to start out with one I think I'm definitely going to like. So, but anyway, shout out to Brew Kettle. Make sure if you're in Ohio, try them out. I think you can buy their beers online. I'll double check that. I should probably know that.
Same with Louisville Winery, right? You can purchase online and have it shipped to you.
Yep. And oh man, you will not be disappointed with those wines. I have
no
the number of people that have DM'd us or just messaged us and been like, wow, these wines are actually really good. They are. Like, we do not lie about the taste of these wines, the taste of these beers. If we don't like them, if I don't like the IPA next week, I'm going to tell you this. I don't like this beer because I hate IPAs, you know. So, but here's what I do hate. All right. What I actually hate. If you have been a follower of this show for very long, you know that we've had issues where we get limited from sports books. They don't want to take our bets. They move lines as soon as we bet it. It's common. It's common in this industry. If you have a winning record, if they're on to you as far as what's going on, they will. This stuff happens. It's no secret. Sportsbooks are in to make money, and they can not take action from anybody they want. I ran into last year, Tipico Sportsbook limited me first. I hit them again with some more bets, and I did not take them for like tons of money. I was just consistently winning. Like, I was probably winning 80% of my bets on Tipico that I was putting in. And, you know, it wasn't like tens of thousands of dollars, but I took a decent amount of money from them. And eventually they didn't tell me, but they told me by not taking any of my action that they didn't want any of my action. Okay. So that was last year. So this year I decided maybe, hey, Tipico has good lines. Like, they have value lines that I try to exploit. So this year I'm like, hey, maybe they buried the hatchet and we're good. So I deposited $25 last week or 2 weeks ago, I don't even remember, to try and get a bet down. That would have lost, by the way. This bet would have lost.
Right.
I tried to get the bet down. They rejected it. They won't even let me get 10 cents down on any bet on their sports. They won't let me get any action at all. So I'm like, all right, whatever. Give me my money back. You know, I try to withdraw it. So I hit the withdrawal. Don't think anything of it. Like, I'm in the back of my mind, I'm like, oh, I'm going to get a Venmo in the next day or two from Tipico. Mm-hmm. A couple days goes by and I get an email from them asking for my ID and then a screenshot of my recent Venmo transactions. And I'm like, okay, whatever. Like, if this is extra security, and I understand that these books have rules where you can't deposit and then immediately withdraw without using it. But here's the thing. I can't use it. So I can't adhere to your rules of using, of betting my money that I deposit because you won't let me.
Right.
So I send them that shit. They still don't send me my money. So I email them back. I'm like, hey, I sent you the stuff. I would appreciate a response. Nothing. Another day goes by. I go, send it again. I said, hey, I feel like you're now holding my money hostage because I can't use it. Please send me my money. Nothing. Third day goes by. I have to threaten legal action with these motherfuckers to get my $25.
$25 fucking dollars.
Which, I mean, you could go the other side and say, Jordan, why do you give a shit about $25? It's still the principle. It's my money.
Mm-hmm.
It took me saying I'm threatening legal action because you are stealing my money. Guess who finally got his money 15 minutes after I sent that email?
Mm-hmm.
Ding. Fucking Venmo comes in. Like, you shady motherfuckers. One, just take my money, but also now just delete my account. If you're not going to take any action whatsoever, not even 10 cents on a single bet, just delete my account, get rid of all my shit, and I will, I don't know. That's my whine about it. I'm irritated. I understand. Like, I know I probably shouldn't have even tried, but fuck.
Right.
It's annoying.
Well, so here's the thing. Like, we gripe about FanDuel and their house rules. We gripe about this company, that betting company, what these little nuanced things. They're a terrible app. They're terrible lines, whatever. But they're not withholding your money. That is a different level of bullshittery. We talk about predatory practices. I know you've tweeted about how Tipico has all these predatory practices, and it's more so than any other book I've ever seen. It's like you get to a point where you and I, we literally will just say never use Tipico because that's where it is. Like, don't use them. Don't fucking use Tipico. And I know there's a guy on Twitter who worked in NASCAR and then ended up working with Tipico, and now he does something else. I'm very curious if he left Tipico because of all the shittiness of Tipico, but he was a big proponent of the Atlanta race. I'll just say that he enjoyed the hell out of it. And I did too. So I've always respected him. Don't use Tipico. I don't think there's any reason to, even if they have slightly better lines or whatever, it's not going to last. A, it's not going to last long. B, they're going to try to get you in all this predatory stuff. And C, you can't get your money back apparently, or make it really fucking hard.
I just, like I said, I'm used to this stuff. I mean, we're both used to it, but once you start withholding or doing really shady shit like that, fuck you. So yeah, maybe they have better lines and whatever, but fuck Tipico, and you will never, ever get my business again or my recommendation, which, you know, I get it. I'm no one important in this fucking world, but
right
at the, it's fuck you overall. Yeah. Fuck you.
Yep. I agree with that. So
it's this week's whine about it.
Welcome, that was a good whine about show. It. I like that one.
Welcome to the show, Brew Kettle. This is
what exactly. But hey, that's, I love the fact that we're sponsored by a wine company so we can whine about it. And then of course, Brew Kettle's a beer company. We like our beers too. And you're actually more of a beer guy than a wine guy. So now if it's even better, might have to have some kind of beer themed pun or something on our segment on our show. As long as we're not making the show too long here.
Yeah. But thank you again to Luvabella Winery, the Brew Kettle, two Ohio based alcohol companies. Be sure to check them out. I put all the links in the bio on YouTube. Shout them out on Twitter. Make sure you check them out. If you can get the wine shipped to you, make sure you do. Same with the beer. Just great products overall. So we are on to Las Vegas, though. Like I was saying before, a brand new tire being debuted here at Las Vegas this weekend. Obviously, we had two races here last season. William Byron taking the first. Kyle Larson took the first. Sorry. No, Byron took the first. Larson took the second.
Yeah.
There we go. Both of them dominated. Byron led 176 laps. Larson finished second, led 63. In the second race, Kyle Larson led 133 laps. Christopher Bell finished second. He led 61. So when we're looking at Las Vegas, obviously we have the four races with the next-gen car at this specific racetrack. And then we have Kansas as well, which is the sister track to Las Vegas, very similar. And then, you know, the overall mile-and-a-half intermediates. But when we're looking at the closest together We're looking at Las Vegas, and we are looking at Kansas. But as yes. I mentioned, we do have a new tire this weekend. Coming from Bob Pockers' Twitter account, new right side tire for Cup for Vegas this year will also be used at Texas, Kansas, and Nashville. Has an updated construction that hopefully gives teams more of a tuning window. Remember last year, some teams had issues with right sides in practice, but were okay in the race. Here's the thing. We have seen tire issues come into play at here at Vegas and at Kansas. Mm-hmm. In races and in practice.
Mm-hmm.
Giving teams more of a tuning window, does that open – am I reading this wrong? Does that open the door for potentially more tire issues?
I'm hoping it means less in the fact that you can tune it in a window where it won't fail as much. You know what I mean? Because that's the way I'm reading it. And what that means is it means there's a wider variety of feasible options for tires. So there could be a little more difference in the way teams set tire pressures and things like that, which may lead to more passing. So that could be a good thing. But then again, teams always try to push it, right? And they'll end up having tire failures. So who knows? I honestly don't know what to make of this. But I think the way I read it is a wider tuning window means, well, they were trying to tune it, and then they end up having failures. But at least they found it out in practice and didn't have as much in the race. Now, they still had some. I remember Tyler Reddick having a failure 2 years ago at Kansas. I remember Byron having a failure, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So it gives teams a little more wiggle room, I think, to not have failures, which gives them more setup options. I think that's a good thing because you'll have some that hit it, some that miss it, some that fix it mid-race, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's a good thing. But teams are always going to push the limit. You know that. I know that. They're always going to push the limit of what they can get away with in a tire.
Yeah, I see your point. You know, I read it the opposite way. Like, they have more of a tune, so they can get more aggressive. And I'm like, could this get? But if they have more of a window, then yes, maybe we get less tire issues. But we don't know. Like, this is nothing that we can predict until they get on track and even practice.
Exactly, unless literally they make, unpredictable for us.
unless they make super long runs, which we don't see a ton of in practice. With this next gen car and it being split into two groups, you know, there's no guarantee that we're even going to know how we could very well see a ton of tire issues coming to play.
A wider tuning window might mean we even see less of the long runs, right? Because they have more to tune. They could tune it multiple different ways and try to figure out what's working best. So if anything, that might make it worse from a practice standpoint. I don't know. We're just going to have to watch and wait and see. But again, like I suggested with the duels, watch the fucking duels. Remember that to give us an idea on Daytona? Watch fucking practice this weekend for Las Vegas, the Cup Series practice. Watch it. See what teams say. See what drivers say. See what Bob Pockra says. Watch. Listen to the Fox, almost at NBC. Listen to the Fox commentators, right? Like,
if
the more information you can get, the better, especially this early in the season.
You know what account provides some amazing information when they're at the track is PRN Live. They interview almost every driver. They tweet about every single driver. I get so much more information from them, specific information, than I thought I ever would. But they don't go to every race. They don't do it every race. But when they do, make sure you latch onto that because they give a lot of great information. And anything questionable like this, you know, with a new tire debuting. And honestly, you know, when we get new tires, it's typically not a big change. It's typically a lot of the same, but it's just something to keep an eye on as we go into Las Vegas this weekend. But as I said, you know, obviously the last four races at Las Vegas are good to look at. The Kansas races. Are you looking at anything else this weekend? Any other track?
Honestly, mostly Kansas and Las Vegas. I really am mostly just looking at that. But even then, I'm not looking at it that much because the Fords, the Toyotas, they have these new bodies. So practice is going to be a decent chunk of it. And remember last year when I think it was Las Vegas. Like, I think it was Las Vegas last year. I'm looking at the schedules. The third race last year. So we had Auto Club, which is a huge high tire wear track. But Las Vegas, people are looking at 10 lap times and saying like, oh, the 10 lap. But I wasn't as concerned with the 10 lap as I was with the fall off between the 5, the 10, the 15, right? So things like that. Like, look at the trajectory of the lap times. That more than just like, here's my 10 lap average. So that's the piece of advice I'll give around practice. Now, again, if there's a bigger tuning window, we may get less 5, 10, 15 trajectories. We may get a bunch of 5 lap runs. And in that case, it makes it really fucking hard. But what I do know when I'm looking at Las Vegas is either the Fords or the Toyotas, probably one of those will improve, right? You would think. Mm-hmm. And in that case, I'm interested in their drivers, specifically ones that might be mispriced. And as we talked about with Front Row Motorsports, they're mispriced. Like, if Michael McDowell is running relatively close, I'm not saying exactly, but like relatively close to a Penske car, if Todd Gilliland is running relatively close to a Penske car, they shouldn't be as long as they are in the betting circles. Similar with Toyota. If Toyota somehow hits it, yeah, we know Denny Hamlin's going to be great. We know Martin Truex Jr. is going to be great. We know, you know, these guys are going to be good. But what about Ty Gibbs? Like, this is a very solid track type for Ty Gibbs from his Xfinity days. He now has a year and a half in this car. He made a lot of progress in the second half of the year last year. You know, he had zero top fives in his first 36 career Cup Series races. I should say 35. He qualified for Phoenix but didn't end up racing it that first year. But let's say 36 races. The second half of the year, after his first 36 races, he had a top five at Pocono. He had a top five at Watkins Glen. He had a top five at Bristol. He had a fourth place finish at the Roval. So he had four top fives to end the last 15 or so races of the year last year. And some of them, he even led a good chunk of laps. So Phoenix last year, or Phoenix 2 years ago, was after his father passed away. So that's why he didn't race it. But he's essentially had a year and a half in these cars already. Watch out for Ty Gibbs. You know, he opened 30-1 at Westgate. I grabbed it immediately. I couldn't track it, of course, because we didn't have tracking set up. I guess I could have custom tracked it. It's probably something I should consider going forward. The problem is, you know, if I custom track it right away, nobody else can get the line anyway. So what good does it do you all? All it does is make my record look either better or worse. But I got Ty Gibbs 30-1 right at the open.
Yeah, he's sitting. He's currently at 28 on DraftKings.
And I like that. I like 28-1. I like that. If you can get 28-1 on Ty Gibbs, I love it. I got Michael McDowell right at the open at 200-1, and you saw the tickets. I sent them to you. I got Todd Gilliland right at the open 300-1. Those were the three I hit immediately. And I was trying to get Joey Logano 25-1 right at the open at Westgate, and ended up getting him 20-1 because they moved as I was trying to bet it. Yeah, so those are the bets I've made for Las Vegas. Like, even then, just like we're talking Joey Logano, it's the Pennzoil 400. He's the Pennzoil car. It's Ford. It's Penske. His teammate was 10-1. Why is Joey Logano 25-1? Again, yeah. I didn't get it. They moved it when by the time I saw lines and tried to bet it, they moved it right when I was going to bet it. So I have 20-1. I have a 20-1 ticket on Joey Logano. And those are the four bets I've made this week. Now, unfortunately, I couldn't track any of them because it takes a little while. We don't have a feed in the Action Network app from Westgate. We have to wait for one of the books in a lot of states, and because we auto pull from them to get like Caesars or BetMGM or DraftKings or FanDuel or, you know, all those ones that you see if you go to actionnetwork.com/NASCAR. So I could custom track them, but me custom tracking it is only going to do two things. One, it's only going to help a very few people who have Superbook, and Westgate Superbooks releases lines first. Then all the other Superbooks states get it an hour later. So even if I track it at Westgate Superbook here in Nevada, you're not going to be able to bet it because they don't release it to all the other Superbook states until they've been bet into a little bit. So that happens first. And then second, If I'm tracking those, I'll probably end up moving the line anyway for people who do live in Nevada end up betting it, because I do have followers that live in Nevada, right? So it's a double-edged sword of being a content creator, being somebody who's very well respected. I will say that. I think I'm very well respected in this betting industry of NASCAR. So what is my better play here for those of you listening to the podcast? What should I do? Well, I can wait until the lines come out for not just Superbook, but all the others. Or maybe I can just wait for the lines to come out at Superbook only, and then it's only a small handful of states that get it, and track it custom track. But it only benefits a small group of people, and then the line gets bet down, and then all the other books, not all, but a lot of them copy off of Westgate anyway, and then take even more hold. And it's like, I don't know. I'm very curious your opinions on it, but obviously I have tickets on them. If one of them wins, I will show it. I very much bet into those, but it's from a tracking in the Action Network app standpoint, I feel like I'd almost screw more people by tracking it when nobody can bet it than helping people.
Yeah, it's tough. My rule of thumb when it comes to tracking in the app is if it's I don't track anything unless it's widely available. So
that's what I try to do. Typically I try to do, but now, you know, all of a sudden I hit a 18-1 and I didn't track it and people are pissed that I didn't track it. So it's one of those things. Like I should track everything, right? I don't know.
Yeah. I honestly don't know either. I don't have an opinion. And I'm sure, you know, anybody that would reply are going to have a plethora of opinions, you know, that's
exactly.
It's not going to be
that's the thing.
It's a no-win situation for you.
It's a no-win situation. You can try to do the right thing to please as many people as possible, but there will still be people who are not pleased. And me being who I am, I have a hard time accepting that because I'm a people pleaser. I try to help everybody. I try to, make sure everybody can get the best line, even sometimes to my own detriment. And it's just one of those things. I know I'm saying a lot because I'm like trying to, it's an uncomfortable thing to speak about, but eventually at some point I have to take care of myself first and foremost, right?
Yep. That's the number one thing here. And that's how you got to where you are. So you have to do what you got to do. So that's my opinion on it. And obviously people are going to have different ones, but
what do you think of those bets? What, like, you know, I just mentioned four of them.
The long shots?
Yeah. Like Ty Gibbs, Joey Logano, yes, et cetera.
So I was going to get to that because we both have – actually, I have more bets early on this week than I intended to. And I know, you know, we're on a couple of the same bets, which we're going to get to here in a second. So right there with you on Ty Gibbs. You look at last year, you know, one of his best qualifying efforts was right here at Las Vegas. Qualified fourth in this race, qualified fourth at Texas, another mile and a half track, qualified seventh at Kansas. Toyota, Joe Gibbs Racing is good at Las Vegas. There's no reason why we could not see Ty Gibbs compete for the win. Like you said, he reminds me a lot of William Byron when it comes to Byron wrecked a lot on mile and a halfs early in his career. He had a lot of issues on these tracks. And then all of a sudden, he became a contender. And so I love Ty Gibbs this week. I'm thinking about betting him 28-1. I can't hate on I messaged you as soon as I saw when Superbook opened here in Ohio. I saw Logano at 18-1, and that was the one that immediately jumped out to me. I'm like, that makes no sense because he won this race 2 years ago. It seems like Penske is always a contender here at Las Vegas.
Yes.
I think Blaney's going to have a great race this weekend. There's no reason why Logano won't or shouldn't. So, yeah, if you got Logano, I'm mad that I did not pull the trigger on Logano at 18-1. I'll say that. You know, you were trying to get him at 25-1. Kudos to anybody that got that. I like that.
And I have a friend who got it at 25-1. You know,
you showed me that.
He lives in Nevada with me though, so he's able to get it at the drop. And you know, he messaged me, "Hey, Joey's or Westgate just dropped," and as soon as I go to get it, moved. So he got it first, and You know, I try to make sure I get lines at the drop, but I can't just sit there all day refreshing the app, and we don't get notifications. Yeah. Even here in Nevada with the biggest sports book in the world, they don't send you a notification when NASCAR lines are available. So I can't spend all day on Monday or Tuesday or whatever day it is. You know, if we have a Monday Daytona race, it's Tuesday. Can't just spend all day just sitting here refreshing the app. I know I do it a lot, but there'll be times I miss it.
Especially when, like, these apps don't, these books don't have a specific time that they drop stuff. Like, it'd be, if they were on a schedule, it'd be awesome. If anybody would develop an app that would be like, hey, these lines just dropped, you know, something that's constantly monitoring it, I would pay for that, to be honest with you, because
it's a useful tool.
So, as far as, you know, McDowell, Gilliland, those long shots, don't hate those at all. I wish there were odds dropped that correlated with top tens for them, mm-hmm. you know, sitting there at the super long 200-1, you know, I think you got Gilliland at 300-1. I think those are solid bets. So I can't argue against any of your bets. I really like the Ty Gibbs. That's my favorite there. Looking at a couple of the bets that I've made and one that you and I are both on, and it's still mm-hmm. available after we hit it on, was it Monday night? Whatever night it was. John Hunter Nemechek -110 over versus Carson Hocevar. It moved to -120 on Tuesday. It's back to -110. Nick, I'll let you explain because you messaged me about this. I put 2.2 units on it to win two. Credit to you for finding this one. What's your thought process here behind Nemechek over Hocevar when it comes to Las Vegas this weekend?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. So we know Legacy Motor Club just as a whole last year. If we look at, like, let's say 2023, if we look at Eric Jones, how did he perform at this track type? Well, it wasn't amazing. It wasn't terrible. But last year he did, end up pulling a 13th place finish at Texas, which is somewhat similar given the tire stuff. He had a 21st at Kansas in the playoffs. He had a 22nd. And then it's one of those things where, like, this has been a fine track type, especially if you go 2 years ago with Legacy Motor Club. They seem to fall off from 2022 to 2023 when they went from Petty to Legacy. But a lot of that was just the Chevy pecking order. He finished eighth. Eric Jones finished eighth at Las Vegas in the playoff race in 2022. It was really fast in that race. It wasn't a fluky eighth place finish by any means. He also nearly finished, I think it was ninth or something, at Las Vegas in the very first race of the next gen car at a mile and a half. He finished 31st, but he was running ninth when he had a tire failure late, I think it was, and ended up wrecking with a few laps to go. So this is a team that has the capability to run really well, but now they have moved from tier three Chevy to what they're saying is tier one Toyota. So if they're essentially in Joe Gibbs Racing equipment or 2311 equipment, or even near that, that's going to be way ahead of Spire equipment, who is, as we know, probably low tier two or tier three, you know, similar to Legacy Motor Club last year. If we look at the point standings, Eric Jones finished better than Corey LaJoie, for example, in 2023. So we got to at least think, that Eric Jones is Eric Jones had a penalty as well on the season. So he would have finished ahead of Corey LaJoie in the point standings, I should say. And now they get a significant upgrade. So while I'm saying Eric Jones, his teammate, John Hunter Nemechek, is getting the same equipment. Mm-hmm. And even if he's a bit of a downgrade from Eric Jones in talent, this is actually one of John Hunter Nemechek's better track types overall, as it has been in the Xfinity series with Joe Gibbs Racing. I just don't see a world where a potentially near Gibbs, near 2311 style team is significantly worse or at minimum equal to, but probably better than a Spire Motorsports team. But we're not talking Corey LaJoie. We're talking Carson Hocevar, who has not had as much experience in the cup cars in the next gen car, just like John Hunter Nemechek. So to me,
is also prone to more mistakes because of his aggressiveness. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. To me, this is a smash John Hunter Nemechek minus 110.
Yeah. Not to mention, and you know my opinion on this, Spire Motorsports is now three cars. Mm-hmm. I understand that they're on the up and up. Yep. I also don't like teams that overextend their resources. I feel like that overall hurts them if they don't have the full backing to do it. I think that's a big problem with Stuart Haas Racing and what in their four cars. I think that's an issue why they don't have speed. We have seen Spire contend here in these first two races. Yes, super speedway races.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm right there. Like I said, I already put 2.2 units on this. John Hunter Nemechek minus 110 over Carson Hocevar. Right there with you with all the reasoning. I like it. I like it a lot. And I think even if they were in similar equipment, I don't think it's as big of a gap talent wise as some people think. So
I agree.
So yeah, other bets.
I think John Hunter Nemechek's better than Carson Hocevar.
Really?
Just in general.
From there. I like the upside of Hocevar just because.
How many times has Hocevar won? How many times has John Hunter Nemechek won? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like, JHN is a really goddamn good driver, and he doesn't get enough credit for what he does. He has bigger upside than Noah Gregson, in my opinion.
It's going to be very – there's a lot of – this first non-super speedway race, there's a lot of question marks that are going to come out here, and we're going to get some maybe minor answers, but we're going to get some answers. And that's the excitement of this season coming up. But other bets that I have made, I put half a unit on Ross Chastain, even money over Chase Elliott. I really like Ross Chastain this weekend, like a lot, way probably too much. But looking at Las Vegas and Kansas, Chastain obviously had a better average running position than Elliott in the first Vegas race last year, but Chastain's average running position 5.4 in the second Vegas race, 11.5 to 27th for, I think Chase Elliott obviously had issues, but still better. Mm-hmm. Kansas, the first race, Chastain 7.4, Elliott 12.2. Second Kansas race, Elliott beat him 5.2, 12.9. I think, and then going back to 2022, Vegas's Chastain was awesome there as well. Average running positions of 3.8, 5.7. I love this. I love Chastain this week. I love Chastain over Elliott this week. So definitely like that. Also got 0.2 units on Chastain, 18 to 1. I could not pass up 18 to 1. So when I told you I saw Logano at Superbook when they opened at 18 to 1, and I was eyeing it, I saw they had Chastain at 16. And I was like, I like it. It's staring me in the face, but I didn't pull the trigger. Woke up the next day and they moved it to 14. I'm like, well, I don't really like it at 14. Bet 365 opens up 18 to 1. Ross Chastain, yep, hit it. I have to. I think Chastain can definitely win this race, and I'm heavy on him. I think he can definitely run top five and compete. So,
to me, here's one. My only issue with that is I don't know how the Chevys are going to be compared to the Fords or the Toyotas because we have new bodies mm-hmm. on the Fords and the Toyotas.
Yeah,
and
18 to 1 is just too long for me. I had to hit it.
I don't know about that. Like, I don't actually know if I agree with that. I just there is a chance that just Chevy or Ford or not Chevy, Ford or Toyota is just dominant, and that's why I want to play the Fords and the Toyotas because there's so much uncertainty. When there's more uncertainty, it's better to play long shots. And I'm not saying you're not playing a long shot at 18 to 1. I'm just saying the probability lies with one of Toyota or Ford improving, if not both, relative to the Chevys. So, like, any Chevy that isn't, like, severely mispriced, and I don't know if Chastain's severely mispriced, and I do like him at this track tip. I really do. I just I don't know. I would rather take a flyer on the uncertainty at 25 or 20 with Logano than 18 with Chastain, where we have a Chevy that's certain, but the Toyotas and the Fords are uncertain.
So I do have a Toyota bet, by the way. Bubba Wallace 22 to 1.
Yes. Yes. 100%.
And I think I'm going to get on Ty Gibbs 28. I think I am. I told myself I wasn't betting outrights this week, but yeah, we know how that goes.
Here's another one. Bubba was 30, opened at 30, and I go to bet him and he moved 18.
Man, That's
so. He opened 30 at Westgate. When I went in there, you know, and I'm trying to see what's going on. And before I end up making the bet, Bubba had moved to 18. Before I end up making the Joey Logano bet, he moved from 25 to 20. Thankfully, Ty Gibbs didn't move, so I got him at 30, like I said. But Joey Logano moved. Joey and Bubba both moved to 18. Joey moved back to 20. Ended up betting him once he moved back to 20. But, yeah, so, like, you know, like I said, if a ticket wins, you'll see Michael McDowell, Joey Logano will be sooner timestamps, I think it is, than Todd Gillen. Well, Todd Gillen stayed at 300, so I didn't care about that. But, like, a sooner timestamp than – or, sorry, other way around. McDowell and Gibbs will be sooner timestamped than Logano. And then I ended up betting McDowell around that time when I bet Logano because I was like, yeah, if I'm betting McDowell, I should bet Gillen. Like, why the fuck not? But
– yeah.
One of those things where lines come out and it's like, okay, I got to bet them. And then they're moving in and I'm like, what do I bet? What do I don't? How are they going to move? What do I wait for? What do I track? What I don't track? All that shit. You know, it's just Monday, like for me, working with Action Network, right? Like I work a lot. I do college basketball projections this time of year as well. So my 100% focus isn't when is NASCAR lines opening and what else can I do? Mm-hmm. And also I just came off the Super Bowl. I just came off the Daytona 500 and then there was Atlanta. So I'm fucking tired. Like I'm fucking tired. I slept in on Monday so hard that, and I even slept in on Sunday. I know you did the DFS show on Sunday. I didn't even respond to you about it because I knew I was just going to sleep in.
Yeah.
Like I was, you need, I've and just you need been that so exhausted. Sometimes. Yeah. And now I feel great. Like I'm ready to go. I'm ready to roll. Let's fucking go. I've had several days of sleeping in, you know, still doing my job. Don't get me wrong, but just like I needed to catch up on sleep. I've been so sleep deprived, relatively speaking. And I'm also not a morning person. So it's just one of those things where like the perfect storm has lined up to like, okay, now my batteries are recharged. Like I'm ready to go now. I'm ready for Vegas. But Monday I wasn't. Monday I was sleepy, especially after a crazy Atlanta. But you know, today's Tuesday. I've had a chance to sleep in on Monday, slept in this morning on Tuesday. Now I'm like ready to go. I'm wired. I'm ready to go. But it's already after lines are out.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is I went this entire episode, I went until now thinking that today was Wednesday and it's fucking Tuesday.
Oh, don't worry. I'm right there with you. Like my days are, especially after Daytona where it was Monday and then we recorded the day after Daytona. Yeah. And I'm like,
you get screwed up
2 days after. So it has to be Wednesday. Right. But no, yeah. Tomorrow's Wednesday.
But yeah, so obviously, you know, we disagree on, I still like the show.
I don't hate your Chastain bet. I just don't think I would make it. I don't think I would make it. I 100% understand the thought process. I agree with you. I think he's really good here. I agree with you. 18-1 last year would be valuable.
Little, but there's a lot of uncertainty going into this race. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what? You know what irritates me?
That's the only pause I have. And I think it's good to disagree, right? Like if we just always agree, it would be a fucking boring ass show to listen to.
Yeah. And you know what irritates me about making this bet now? Like I'm not irritated. I still love this bet. I'm 100% in on this bet.
Mm-hmm.
But Chastain typically, unless he has the top three car for sure, he typically does not qualify well, which would lend longer line after qualifying. But I saw the 18 and I'm like, I'm not missing out on this if I liked 16. That was my mindset on it. So that's I jumped.
It's funny because PJ Walsh, who's my Action Network colleague, he wrote an article. He bet basically the same guys I bet, Logano, Bubba, and Ty Gibbs. And I haven't mentioned Bubba. I'm on Bubba as well. I think at 25-1 I end up getting. But I came out firing just like PJ because we wanted to take advantage of these angles of if Toyota's going to be good, Bubba and Ty Gibbs. Like, while they're not Denny Hamlin, they're not Martin Truex Jr., etc., they're not Christopher Bell, they're still good. If Toyota dominates, We've seen Bubba be amazing at Las Vegas and Kansas. We've seen him Kansas lead. Too. Yeah.
I mean, he won Kansas.
I mean, Kansas, he fucking absolutely dominates. But like even Las Vegas, remember the Racy and Kyle Larson had their little shindig. He was the top Toyota at the time. Yeah. He was having a great race, but obviously they ended up getting into an incident, and that's what's remembered. But he was fucking crushing. So love Bubba Wallace here. Love Ty Gibbs here, and they're just too long if Toyota is going to be the dominant manufacturer. And that's the thing. I don't know if Toyota is going to be the dominant manufacturer. I actually have no clue. I don't know if Ford's going to be the dominant manufacturer. I have no clue. But if they are, if Toyota is, if Ford is, I like the Logano value. I like the Gibbs value. I like the Bubba value. I like McDowell and the Gilliland values if they're going to be in Penske's, essentially. I'm not saying they are. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They're not. But based off the super speedways, they look like they are. You know what I mean? So it's the one of those things where like I got a little aggressive with those guys, but I can't bring myself to bet a Chevy right now. And I'm not saying your bet's bad. If things are like last year, that is a great bet on Ross Chastain 18-1. I just question it because Toyota could be awesome. Ford could be awesome. And if they aren't, your bet is fucking amazing.
Mm-hmm. So what's driving all this and creating a lot of potential value in this betting world right now with Vegas is books have made Kyle Larson so short and mm-hmm. such a heavy favorite. He mm-hmm. is 4-1 at most books to win this race. Nobody else is shorter than next one is Byron at 9-1. Like they have come out and said, you know, Larson is dead. And how can you not? Because you look at the last two Vegas races, average running position, 2.2 and 2.3. Like,
how can you not? I'll tell you how you cannot. Remember 2 years ago when Larson won Auto Club, and even though he wasn't even close to the dominant car?
Yeah.
And then they made him like...
But he was a dominant car in both Vegas races.
No, I'm talking 2 years ago, not last year.
Yeah, I'm saying Vegas specifically. He was the dominant car last year.
Not that. No, not two years ago. I'm talking 2 years ago. No, listen to me. 2 years ago. 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Larson won Auto Club, even though he was not dominant. And then the next race at Vegas, they made him super short, and people are betting him 6-1, 5-1, 4-1. And I'm like, the guy wasn't dominant. What are you doing? So, like, we're already getting that with Larson, even shorter than he was at Vegas 2 years ago, even shorter. But now there's more uncertainty.
Yeah, I have no interest in betting Larson.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I'm just saying he was
2 years ago. At least we had Auto Club under our belts for like a normal intermediate race. But he was 6, he was 5, and I still was telling everybody that was a bad bet. And it was. I'm not saying Larson 4-1 is a bad bet now. I'm saying if I hated Larson 2 years ago at 6-1 at Las Vegas,
yeah,
when there was a little bit more certainty, I really don't like him at 4. When there's more uncertainty, because we haven't seen an intermediate race yet. We don't know if the Fords or the Toyotas are going to be amazing right now.
And I don't know anybody that likes Larson at 4-1. I'm just saying.
No, I don't either. I'm just saying.
I understand why he's that heavy of a favorite.
Right. And I definitely agree with you. I understand why he's that heavy of a favorite because of his performance last year at Vegas. My issue is right now things are changing. Mm-hmm. Toyota's changed. Ford's changed. The tire has changed. Chevy, do we even know if they've changed? Have they made improvements? I'm sure they have, but like, is it as much improvement as either of the body changes on these other two manufacturers? The mm-hmm. tire, like we said, there's just so much uncertainty right now. It makes no sense to bet Kyle Larson. If you look 2 years ago, he wasn't that good at Las Vegas. He was mm-hmm. fine. Kyle Busch and Martin Truex Jr. dominated that race, and then Alex Bowman backed into the win, beating Kyle Larson on that final restart. They were good, but they were not the dominant team. And that's my thing right now. What if we see that again? What if we see Kyle Busch, or I should say Toyota, be that dominant, or Ford be that dominant? Then Kyle Larson at 4-1 is a fucking terrible bet, let alone 2 years ago when he was 6-1 and I said he was a bad bet. You know what I mean? And we mm-hmm. still had an intermediate race under our belts then, and we don't now.
No, I'd be surprised if anybody likes Larson at that 4-1. And
yeah, no expert. Nobody. And like you and I always say, shop around. I mean, the guys that win the race have been crushing it. Just shop around. I shouldn't say shop around in terms of lines, like shop around on your expert advice. Lots of us give good advice. Speedway Steve hit the Daniel Suarez winner there. So there's a lot of people who know what they're doing. Aggregate that advice. Don't just blindly tell me. I know the people in my Action Network Discord just blindly tell me. And I'm like, but I don't actually agree with you blindly tailing me. I think you should listen to a lot of experts and form your own opinions and start betting yourself. And I think that's what's really good about Greg. Greg Mathern used to just, I wouldn't say blindly tail me, but he would tail me almost to a T, and then he'd start forming his own opinions. And then he'd start forming opinions that I didn't agree with, and I'd inform him whether I agreed with them or not. And it was an information game, and he'd learn where he was right and where he was wrong. And he's become one of the best NASCAR bettors that I know. It's that kind of thing. And you're similar. Stevie TPFL, Stephen Young from my Running Hot podcast. We all have our own processes. Stevie's process is different from mine. Your process is different from mine. Greg's process is different from mine. When you aggregate all those, you start to understand where the value is. And I listen to all of you. If I have my very strong opinions, which I always do, I'm an opinionated person, it doesn't mean I discard your opinion. I'd love your Ross bet if Chevy is going to be good, like I said. And I'm not discarding that. I am saying that's something I'm going to look for going into this weekend for practice. You know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. So take people's advice, but I will guarantee you none of us are on Kyle Larson at 4.5-1.
Oh, no. No. But here's,
not a person.
Speaking of Greg, though, so we were talking about, you know, early bets that we made and the betting board value down after Larson, basically because mm-hmm. Larson was so short. And he said, mm-hmm. I mean, the mostly – I'm directly reading this DM from Greg, and I told him I was going to read it. He goes, I mean, the most likely result is that Larson comes out and just absolutely cucks all of us, leads 240 laps and wins by 5 seconds, but I feel like there's some value down the board this week. And I was just like, 100%. Like, this is the perfect Larson week where – we're like, oh, there's some value here. And then he just comes out and fucking shits on all of us. But
maybe.
It's not guaranteed, maybe. But I can see it happen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's what I'm saying. That's why I'm saying maybe, because I didn't say no. I said maybe. Yeah.
going back, though, I want to touch on Toyota again, because, you know, you talked about the uncertainty with Toyota. We don't know if they're going to have cars good enough to win this race. Is there value betting there? Yes. I really like Bubba Wallace. I really like Ty Gibbs. You know, Truex has been good at this track. Hamlin's going to be one of the favorites. I'm interested, though, in top Toyota bets. Right now, looking at 365, Ty Gibbs 12-1 and Bubba 8-1. I like those. I don't like Eric Jones at 16-1, but I like Ty Gibbs at 12-1.
I'm interested in Ty Gibbs. I wouldn't say I'm interested in Bubba. I think Bubba's around the average Toyota right now. Yeah. 8-1 is around the average Toyota right now. Technically, 7-1 is, but I think Ty, Bubba, close to the average Toyota. Like, I don't think I would bet Ty Gibbs at 8-1, but maybe 9.5, right? Like, anything longer than 9.5, I think I would bet him. So if double digits, Ty Gibbs, I can get behind. But I was actually very curious that you said that, because when we're talking manufacturers, this is one that I'm really mad about. Caesars, when they dropped their lines, opened Ford, winning manufacturer, 4-1.
Ooh.
And with the uncertainty in the manufacturers, again, one of those I go to bet instantly moves to 3-1 before I even bet it. I'm really mad about that. And that's right in line with where the market was. But I actually am considering betting that, because the Ford car count is just as high as the Chevy car count, right? Like, but the problem is with the Fords, there's a big drop off after you look at Team Penske. Yeah. Like, Team Penske is premier. RFK is really good, but they were not premier last year. They were good, really good. You know, Buescher definitely won a Michigan, I think it was, and you know, had some wins here and there, but I think it was Richmond and a super speedway, but they weren't like premier at the mile and a half or the intermediates. Front Row is unknown. We think they're going to be a lot better, and they should be. Stewart Haas Racing probably is uncompetitive relative to the rest of their Ford stable. So it's hard for me to get 3-1. Damn, I wish I got 4-1. And I tried, and I just didn't get it. It was moved by the time. I literally saw it in the app, went to go, you know, signed in, all that stuff, and gone. And that's the game. That's why I can't sit here and wait to tell the Discord what to bet or to track, wait to track it in the app. It's gone before I can even bet it myself. And I do this for, you know, as my second living. Obviously, I work for Action Network for a living. But like, as my second living, I bet. And I was on top of the game with Caesars and still didn't get the line.
Here's an interesting one for you. Speaking of Ford. Number of Fords in the top 10, 2.5 over. Even money.
Over.
So you got Logano.
Let's bet that right now.
You got Logano and Blaney.
Where's my phone? Here it is.
And then Keselowski, who finished fourth here last year, legitimately ran top five all race.
Yeah.
Buescher finished 11th last fall here at Vegas. And then you got the uncertainty of Front Row Motorsports and how good they're going to be. I like Ford's over 2.5 on Caesars. I'm going to bet it too.
I think it's a great bet. It's loaded here. Just give me a second. Over, let me scroll down to it. Now I'm trying to find it. So if you're listening to this podcast, we're both just sitting here trying to scroll our phones. Is this one of those where I can't find it because of my state or the way the app is behaving because I can't find it?
So I had to go to...
Same thing we did like 2 weeks ago with the...
No, so I went to NASCAR, then I found the race, and then I go to Futures, and then where That's it where shows like top Chevy, top Toyota, top Ford, you keep going down, uh-huh. And it says number of Fords in top 10.
This I don't might have be, that. I don't
ooh,
have
they got
that.
Qualifying odds. You don't have that?
I literally, you said top Chevy, top Toyota, top Ford. Then I have Ford versus Chevrolet, Ford versus Toyota, Chevy versus Toyota, top Chevy and top Toyota, but I don't have like Fords or Toyotas in top 10.
That's weird.
I'm going to click on the thing and see if I like, there was a couple bets we made a couple weeks ago in the Action Network Discord did where we had to like click on the races like name and like do this weird fucking navigation. Caesars app, by the way, while we're talking, you know, Tipico and how terrible they are, and you know, you and I complain about apps a lot, I don't not recommend betting with Caesars. I think they're great, but the navigation, that there's other, have you even seen they have finishing position bets?
Yeah,
Bubba Wallace
yeah.
finishing position over 14.5. I didn't even notice this. What the fuck? But I had to go navigate the wrong ass way to find it.
They do margin of victory bets now as well.
Yeah, I've seen that, but that's under the normal popular whatever. Like, I don't have, I legitimately don't have top whatever Fords in the top 10. That's not a bet that exists for me. Yeah, average speed of the race. And I looked at all those. Trust me, I did. Because I would have brought up Ford over 1 or 2.5 had I seen that. But I don't have the Ford thing. I legitimately don't. I saw average speed was like 135.5. I saw number of leaders or lead changes 20.5. Like I saw all that shit. And I looked into it because I was ready to be like, hey, we should bet this on the podcast or whatever. And those are all pretty fair lines. But the Ford one, I would have brought up, but I don't have it. Like, it's just not in my app. It's just not there.
That happens to me sometimes, too. It's fucking weird.
And I went to the alternate place to look, and it's not there. So, there we go.
What do you think about this? Most laps led by any driver over under 112.5. It has hit the over in 3 of the 4 Vegas races.
I think there's enough uncertainty in this one. I don't want to bet it.
Agree. Right there with you. Larson led 133 last fall, which obviously would be over, but it's not over by, you know,
a ton. I looked into it and I saw that as well. I saw it was over in 3 of the 4 and I saw the numbers and all that. I'm like, I would bet it if there was like a really consistent, strong pattern. And then I included Kansas as well, but there isn't. You know, and that's why I looked in all these and I saw the Vegas one was, yeah, technically just for the 4 Vegas races, it's gone over 75% in a 4 race sample, but added in uncertainty.
No.
It's not not the same as like Daytona, right? Where we have like Daytona 500 is so different where there is 8 races out of the last 8 where a driver didn't lead over 73 and a half laps. It's just like, okay, go hit that, whatever. But this is a little different because we're not talking we're not talking big sample sizes. Me, we're talking more uncertainty.
Mm-hmm. One more bet I want to discuss. Our friend Ryan Stevens from over on Win the Race texted me earlier today, and he said, he put a poll out on Twitter because there was a head-to-head. Derek Krause versus Justin Haley. And at the time, Krause was plus 130. Haley was minus 150. So heavy favorite for Haley. It's since moved to, I think, plus 110 and minus 130. What are your thoughts on this?
I just think you kind of have to go Derek Krause, and I don't really care. Yep. You just kind of have to go with the equipment. I don't give a shit about the drivers. You just have to go with the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Rick Ware Racing, right, with you. Right now, we've seen the super speedway races. Rick Ware Racing has not made monstrous gains. Yeah, Justin Haley ran in the top 3 or 4 or 5 of Daytona for a little bit, but he wasn't a guy that could push his way to the front, could make moves to get to the front. Same with Atlanta. Like, we saw AJ Allmendinger fucking take the lead in the Daytona 500. Guess who did not? Justin Haley.
And for those that don't know, Krause is running the 16 car for Collard this week.
Yeah, exactly.
So, just equipment wise, Krause is in significantly better equipment. Do I like betting it? I'm not going to hit it at 110. If I could have got it at 130, I would have hit
Krause. I'd still hit it at plus 110. Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. I hit it at, it's plus 100 now.
Is it? Yeah, it just keeps getting bet down. But
yeah,
I understand Haley went to front or Rick Ware Racing this year, and they all keep saying that they're getting better, blah blah. They've been saying that for 10 fucking years. We know what Rick Ware Racing is, and this is not a super speedway race. So outside,
I'll tell you right now, today I didn't look at bets at all. I just as much as everybody needs a day off. Yesterday and today, I told you I woke up late. I slept in. I didn't even do NCAA basketball prop projections, anything. My days off have been pretty much non-existent through the end of the end of the NFL season, early NASCAR season. I take a couple days off. I'm a human. I get to take a couple days off. I understand when the lines drop isn't the most ideal time. But when is ever an ideal time? I can't take time off on Thursday because I record Running Hot. I can't take time off on Friday because I do Green Dot Daily. So, you know, those might be the ideal days from a Cup Series standpoint. But just from a my life standpoint, Monday and Tuesday make the most sense. So I took Monday and Tuesday off. My weekend is Monday and Tuesday right now. I will be more active on Mondays and Tuesdays going forward, being proactive with lines, tracking, et cetera, yada, yada, yada. Dude, I'm fucking exhausted. I mean, not now, but I was fucking exhausted. I came off the Super Bowl. I came off, Daytona 500, a full NFL season, which is my primary number one thing in my whole job with Action Network. So I don't feel bad about missing Derek Krause plus one, whatever. I don't feel bad about missing shit. Because we have a long-ass NASCAR season. There'll be of time to get a lot of good bets in. Don't worry. Mm-hmm. If you miss one bet, 3 bets, 5 bets, I've missed a bunch of bets. If you miss them, it's okay. We can't – there isn't a human on this planet. Even somebody as dialed in as Greg on certain days or with the Win the Race guys or you or me or whoever. Even on our most dialed-in days, we're ready to just attack NASCAR lines. we can even get the best and find everything. It's just not possible. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm. I agree. But anything else you have for Las Vegas in this upcoming Pennzoil 400?
No. No, I have nothing.
Our full picks.
Don't bet Larson at his current price. There's a lot of uncertainty, and I'm happy to fire on uncertainty. You know that. I love firing Daytona 500 or Talladega or this or that or the other. I love firing uncertainty. That's why I did make a bunch of bets. But the market settles in before I can track them. That's what happens. I don't have much else to add. I don't know what's going to happen with the tire. I don't know if Ford's going to be better or worse. I don't know if Toyota's going to be better or worse. We kind of know where Chevy is, but we only know where they are relative to Ford and Toyota. And if Ford or Toyota gets better or worse, that changes the calculus, right? So I'm willing to fire in some long shots on Ford and Toyota. I'm not willing to fire in Chevy. Don't bet on Larson. There's a tire uncertainty. That's all I got, dude. That's all I got. I am not a NASCAR insider. And even the ones that are insiders aren't great at predicting what'll happen. So, yeah.
That's going to get us to our picks, though, for this weekend's race, including 30 for 30 and our picks to win, which
36 for 36.
36 for 36. That's what I meant. I'm off to a fucking awful start with picks to win. 21st and 17th place finishes. I had Byron last week who finished 17th. You had Chastain who finished 7th. You obviously had Byron at Daytona who won.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a feeling you're going to pick a Ford or a Toyota here for your pick to win. and I might join you. I'm not going to go Larson. I don't want to go Chastain because I feel like my picks are jinxed right now, and obviously I have that bet on Chastain. So I'm going to go Toyota here. I'm going Ty Gibbs.
To win or 36 for 36?
To win. Sorry.
To win.
Yeah, okay. Picks to win. I didn't know which I'm going Ty Gibbs.
I honestly don't hate that. I hope he wins. I bet on him. yeah, let's go. Dude, this is one of the toughest races of the year just to figure out what to pick to win, what to bet. And like I said, I have a very specific betting strategy to 36 for 36. For my win bet, I have to go with a Toyota or a Ford. I just do. Like, I was actually considering Alex Bowman. But then I think about it. It's the same deal with Ross Chastain. Like, what if the upside's not there? What if one of these other manufacturers has passed them? Problem is, I don't know if it's Ford or Toyota. So I think I'm just going to go with the safest Ford or Toyota pick. And for me, that's Denny Hamlin. Like, I love his championship odds. I love his, you know, preseason, you know, when I did Running Hot with Stevie, loved his over 2.5 wins, loved Toyota's championship odds. I'm just going to go with Denny Hamlin. I don't love the pick. It's just what I'm going to go with. I don't have an opinion on it. You know what I mean?
We have to make picks. So,
yeah.
So you got Hamlin. I got Gibbs. We're riding the Joe Gibbs Racing train with our picks to win this week. Now's the interesting one. 36 for 36.
Mm-hmm.
So first 2 weeks, I went with the 15 and the 51, getting the shit boxes out of the way. You went with the 31 and the 7. You are currently, you have 45 points. I have 30.
I'm going to let you go 50%, first. I have 50% more. Yeah, well, it's my turn to go first anyway. I have 50% more picks than you. Or picks, points than you. And like you said, we can pick the same thing as long as we haven't used a driver again. That's all that matters. So I thought this was interesting, and I actually think this makes a lot of sense on this particular game. I don't think this driver has a specifically strong track type, specifically strong track specificness. He's shown well here. I don't necessarily think that means anything. And it's really safe because I don't know the upside or the downside of two other manufacturers. So I'm going in the Chevy camp. I'm going to take Alex Bowman.
Okay.
I think it's a nice, safe getting pick.
Bowman out. Okay.
I think it's a safe pick. I think it's a guy who's been good here. Not great, but iFantasyRace, Ryan from iFantasyRace, showed that Bowman has like a top 4 or 5, you know, average green flag speed or running position, whatever it was, in the next gen era at Las Vegas. He tends to be better at higher tire wear tracks is the one thing I've noticed. And we do know Las Vegas is trending towards higher tire wear. So I'm going to go Alex Bowman as a relatively safe pick. I might regret using him, but I don't regret using him as much because I'm not using him at road courses. I'm not using him at super speedways. So that eliminates a lot of the schedule that that's already 11 races. I'm not using him if you add up the super speedways and the road courses. So there's only 25 other races total. And with the uncertainty with Ford and Toyota, I could make up a really shitty pick if I pick a manufacturer that ends up sucking at this track type. I could make a great one, a nice upside, but I think this is a time to be safe.
I really like that. And here's the thing with Alex Bowman. There are not many races, especially going into the weekend, that you say, hey, this is Bowman is going to definitely contend this week.
Right.
You know, it just doesn't happen. So, I like that a lot. I might
just tell it.
Do the same thing as you.
The problem is you're still going to be down 15 points.
I know. But that is such a strategically well-placed pick that's hard for me to I'm just going to tail it. I'm going Bowman as well.
I like that pick a lot.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, especially, you know, early on this year. And we talked about this last week with, you know, this game specifically, which, you know, if people don't know what we're talking about, it's where you pick all 36 cars, chartered cars, once a year. So we can't use Bowman again for the rest of the year. With the uncertainty around this race and overall with this season, I think.
Yeah, like if I told you what race are you going to pick Alex Bowman at, you couldn't name one.
No.
Right?
The only.
Whereas like other drivers, you can absolutely name a race where you'd pick them at or a specific track type or, you know, that kind of thing. Like we're not picking AJ Allmendinger or the 16 car in general at anything other than AJ Allmendinger at a road course.
Mm-hmm.
Both you and the I, only like other, we know that.
The only other route I was thinking about going here were someone like a Harrison Burton.
Yeah.
Pulling a Harrison Burton here.
Or Todd Gilliland.
And
I prefer Harrison Burton. I prefer Harrison Burton, like you said.
Yeah. Or I was even kind of thinking of Cindric. He's shown decently good runs here.
The only issue with Cindric is like, where do you want to use him? Probably a road course.
Probably a road course. Yep.
Probably.
That's my mindset. Yep. So,
but that's the thing. We only have 5 road courses this year. So you have to be like, well, I would use Reddick. I would use Elliott. I'd use Cindric. I'd use McDowell. I'd use whoever, Suarez. You know, Suarez. I'd use these guys at a road course. And it's like, okay, but now we've exhausted Gilliland, Burton, right? Like I would use these guys at road court. Like all of a sudden you exhaust all the possibilities.
Not to mention
like, okay, AJ Allmendinger. Well, who is, yeah, not to mention Allmendinger or the 16 car. So then it's like, okay, well, who, or maybe Rick Ware, you know, puts somebody in the 15 or the 51 or whatever it is. That's another reason I didn't use the 15 at a super speedway was what if they put SVG as a one? It's not going to be SVG, obviously, because he's not Chevy or Ford, but you get the point. Like, what if they put whoever is an amazing road course racer into that? You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I get that. That's 100% right. Obviously, I did use the 15 and the 51 already, but I get your point. Whoa, there.
51's fine because Justin Haley is Justin Haley. He's in the ride the whole year.
Right. Yeah. So not going to see me pick up or Nick pick up any more points to make a bigger gap this week. Both have Alex Bowman for the 36 for 36. As far as winning picks, We're both on Toyota, Hamlin, Gibbs, but we don't know what the hell is going to happen with this race. But I'm sure it's going to be a good one. I feel like Vegas produces some very good racing. There's a lot of storylines heading into this race. So,
are you excited for this race? Because I am. I'm just like, I'm ready to see like what we got here. It may end up being the worst race in the world, and we'll call it out as that. May end up being great, and it may be mediocre. We're ready for all of that. Yeah.
There's so many questions. Okay, what's Legacy Motor Club going to do? Because Eric Jones is good at mile and a half. What's John Hunter Nemechek going to do now that they're Toyota? There's one. Yeah. What is Front Row Motorsports going to do as a Tier 1 Ford now? Are they
fucking good here is Ricky Stenhouse Jr. He's good at Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's this is going to be an awesome race. It may be awesome in a, this is completely terribly boring, but we're going to get a lot of answers. If we see something last year where Chase Briscoe just sits in the fucking 30s in speed, but it's not Chase Briscoe, RCR, let's say.
Yeah.
I don't think it will be, but maybe it is. Well, like, I'm just trying to name a random team that randomly just falls off, like Stuart Haas did, or a random driver crew chief team combo that falls off. All of a sudden, it's like, okay, well, they just fell off at Las Vegas. Are they going to be good at? And that's the other thing. Right after Las Vegas is Phoenix short track, Bristol short track, not a track we would compare to Las Vegas. COTA, Richmond, Martinsville. But then Texas, like, do we jump on how bad they're going to be at Texas? Maybe.
Yeah. A lot of questions are going to be answered this week. Like going back to SHR, what the hell are they going to look like? Not only speed wise, but their whole new group of drivers. What's Justin Haley going to do? Like, there are so many question marks that are going to be hopefully a little bit more answered this upcoming week with Las Vegas. So
yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So am I. It should be a good race.
If you voted that Atlanta was a bad race, then I guess you're looking forward to this one as well.
Yeah, no shit. Oh, man.
All right. We should be 100% in agreement that we're all looking forward to Las Vegas then. Because everybody that liked Atlanta is still looking forward to Las Vegas. Everybody that hated Atlanta is looking forward to Las Vegas. Right?
Mm-hmm.
There should be no disagreement on NASCAR Twitter this week. Lock it. No disagreement. Plus,
in a perfect world.
Plus 1 million.
Right?
Yeah.
God. All right. Good luck to everybody this week. Penske 400 at Las Vegas. We'll be back next week talking about Phoenix. What the fuck race is next?
Phoenix.
Is it Phoenix? Yeah.
I think
we go to Bristol. There we go. Yeah.
Enjoy our sponsors. Phoenix. Go buy them. They're amazing. Blue Bell Lions, Brew Kettle.
Yes. See you guys.